unless they see that they're benefiting from what it is they're doing. The resources we used for our project were very helpful. We spoke with Steve Cohen, who works for the Office of Sustainable Development. He talked a little with us about the Bureau and the Office of Sustainability and how helpful they are to our community, which was very useful. We also watched a movie called Future of Food. It gave me a better understanding on how important sustainable gardening is for our society. The book Earth's User Guide to Permaculture was very helpful when we started to garden. It gave us a better understanding of what plants we were going to use and where we were going to put them. We also created an online journal, omcitycorp.blogspot.com. It tells about what our project is about, and it lists steps on how we came to complete our project. I've learned a lot about how significant sustainable gardens can be to us and our community. At first, I didn't know too much about the problem at hand, and then we watched the movie Future Food, and watching that movie gave me a better understanding on everything that contributes to the problem.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Brenneman, and I will be sharing to you our proposals. We propose the following tasks are completed and maintained so that sustainable gardens can be made for communities to benefit from. First off, funding is needed. For a formal tool lending library such as the one Kenton had established at the firehouse, which only requires ID and a utility bill to prove residence, these centers will have everything from shovels to seeds free of cost for residents. Currently, Parks and Rec have some sheds where renters keep their personal belongings, and there is some sharing of tools at community garden sites. But according to Leslie Pohl Cosbo, who runs the community garden programs, there is a need for more of these sorts of sites. It has come to our attention that Parks and Rec programs to involve teens in gardening, hit the dirt, may be losing its funding. We would like City Council to maintain funding for this program and expand on it by creating a financial incentive for schools who incorporate Hit the Dirt into their programs and who additionally teach sustainability, food awareness, and gardening to students. Vivek Shandis, an assistant professor at the Department of Urban Planning at PSU, agreed that education on this subject is very important and shared with us that a study was done and proved that the average American 10-year-old could only identify 7 plants but could identify 100 corporate logos. You should be more educated on what really matters. Outreach and mediation. Parks and Rec currently has a waiting list of 500-plus people who wish to rent a plot in a community garden. We believe that this is something everyone should be able to participate in, and our survey data shows that there is a high interest in participation. Parks and Rec have a scholarship program available through grants. However, as we have demonstrated, community gardens and local agriculture need to be supported, and people with low income should not suffer further. We ask City Council to additionally fund this scholarship so that local may begin to truly mean equality, so that communities may gather and grow, so that education around food and the planet may be supported, and so we can continue to be a progressive and green city. The Diggable City Initiative showed that there is a lack of city-owned property suitable and available for use as community gardens. To remedy this, we ask for funding to increase staffing at Parks and Rec, who are already able to enter into agreements with private landowners and community members who will be able to negotiate the transformation of the land from private to communal garden. However, for this generous donation, Diggable City Phase 3 report recommends investigating the possibility of tax breaks and other incentives because they're a good way to compensate the landowners. We realize that we are asking for a number of things that require some shifting. However, our data expertise and the experience and the expertise of professionals show that there is a need, desire, and demand for these changes. Thank you.
You have just heard about our experience with growing sustainably, as well as the support of our neighbors and the environmental community at large, and some actions that we think need to be taken. In short, funding for continued outreach to programs, specifically Hit the Dirt, tool lending libraries and scholarships so that there's equal opportunity and access, to encourage school participation, and to finally increase staffing at the Parks and Recreation Bureau in order to procure more private land for community gardens. I have learned during my time in this program that even my daily choices can help my community and the world. Please consider this. Yours can too. Thank you for listening today.
Any questions?
Where was Via de Marcel? Is that North Portland?
Yeah.
Okay. And so you took some unused property there and made it into a garden?
They had a garden there, but it wasn't really nice and maintained, so we just put in dirt, put in plants and flowers, and went from there.
That's an excellent report, and we appreciate the recommendations and the good work, and we will move on some of your recommendations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You folks did a great job.
Great job.
Testimony? No one signed up.
Okay, we'll move to the regular agenda.
Yeah. And that was just a presentation, so we don't need a vote. And thanks to Open Meadows and your great work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Please read item 940.
Clarify existing provisions and change reporting threshold for lobbying regulations.
Commissioner Adams.
Thank you, Mayor Potter. Shauna. The lobbying ordinance that has been in effect for over 12 months, as I've said, a number of points, mileposts along the way, is definitely a work in progress. As we have more experience with it, we're able to make changes that polish and perfect it. This particular case, getting the threshold down from 16 to 8 hours, the threshold is the trigger in which individual lobbyists have to register and potentially begin reporting, is something that we've long sought. And we're pleased today to be before you, Mr. Mayor, and the City Council to consider that improvement. With that, I'll have Shoshana very briefly describe what this piece of legislation does and answer any questions and have discussion.
Thank you, Commissioner Adams, Mayor, and Council members. I'd like to thank Commissioners Leonard, Saltzman, and Sen for co-sponsoring this ordinance with our office. This ordinance makes several administrative changes, including the intergovernmental agreements as a discussion that can happen outside of the lobbying requirements. This allows many of our city goals to be achieved when working with our governmental partners. The ordinance also refines the definition of lobbyist, basically just clarifying it, and that's in Section B. In Section C, you'll see that the substance of the ordinance is to reduce the threshold from 16 to 8 hours. So when a lobbying entity spends more than 8 hours at working with one of our elected officials or with a bureau director, that basically triggers the reporting requirements. The remaining edits on that, I'm sorry, the changes are continued through the ordinance to make those refinements so that the 8 hours is reflected throughout the ordinance. The final section of the ordinance includes the term reasonably, where the original requirements for proving a false statement was one that we had to prove that one believed. Now it would be that if there's a reasonable belief. This changes the standard to meet with the other requirements in state statutes that are similar in terms of proving belief.
And this being the month of August, we have a lot of people that we normally consult with on vacation, but the League of Women Voters in your packet sent in a letter of support. Chris Smith, who's on our consultant, our committee, advisory committee, I should say, also sent in a letter of support. And Janice Thompson from the, they just changed their name.
I think it's Democracy Now.
Democracy Now organization sent in an email in support of as well. And that ends our formal presentation.
Is there anybody signed up to testify?
One person signed up, Greg Shifsky. He may have left.
Okay. A non-emergency and move to a second reading.
Well, I wanted to raise an issue before we move it that I've discussed with Commissioner Adams, and that is my sense has been that the definition of who is required to file these reports is unreasonably narrow. I have a sense of how broad I think it should be, but I'm not sure everybody agrees with the breadth of which I would include people who lobby. And so in the discussion Commissioner Adams and I had, we both thought it might make some sense to refer this back to his office, and that he and I and other interested members of the council in our offices and in some broader process and context have that broader discussion, and then possibly have that language hopefully be some kind of a consensus. So I would point out that, for instance, some of the blogs I've read in the last week as this issue has been out there, at least a representative of the League of Women Voters liked the idea of having there be no restrictions on who it is that registers. I mean, anybody who influences the council's decisions by definition spending more than 8 hours a quarter should lobby without regard to whether affiliated with an organization or not. And that's my sense as well. There are others that don't agree with that. So I think would work here, and we've done this, I think, successfully most times, not every time, but maybe go back, have that broader discussion, and see if there's some language we can adopt into this that maybe would make the process that by which we meet with people more transparent.
So you wish to pull it back to your...
Commissioner Leonard's suggestion is that as we continue to look at this and every couple of 2-3 months we come back to you with refinements, that in our next effort at refinement that we have a discussion with the council and stakeholders to look at the issue of who's required to register and report.
I am sympathetic to what Commissioner Leonard is speaking about. I think that if the goal here, and it states right here that it is to increase the transparency in city decision making, this ordinance misses a lot of people who are influencing city decision making, and it seems like rather than recognizing the elephant in the room, that there's like a whole universe of people out there who are influencing us, who are not triggering reporting requirements, and instead trying to ratchet down these thresholds, thinking we're going to finally, if we get it down fine enough, we're going to unveil the grand conspirators who are the people that pull our strings. It just seems to me this is it's not genuine in its intent. I mean, we're trying. I think it's a few people who are driving this that think if we, there's these paid lobbyists out there that are just controlling everything. But I also know if you look at any of our public schedules, I think you'll see the majority of my appointments are spent with people representing citizen groups, neighborhood organizations, nonprofits. And it seems to me it's not transparent. If you really want to give the public transparency, those areas should also be reflected in these reports.
Well, I rest assured, Commissioner, that this ordinance is genuine in its intent, and it is the product of the political environment, and to get it initially passed and make these refinements over the past year has had to be done in the political environment, and you have been part of that discussion. And compromises that have had to be made over the past year have included compromises that you asked for. So I continue to push for refinements to it. I think a discussion, it took a year to get it passed, and I think a discussion about exemptions at this point after a year of experience with it is very appropriate. The biggest exemption right now is people that have contracts with the city. In terms of the implementation of those contracts, they're exempt, and it seemed like a reasonable exemption, but I'm willing to look at that. But the biggest exemption is neighborhood associations. And the big elephant in the room is the fact that neighborhood associations are exempt from having to report. However, under this ordinance, they do have to stay within a qualifying, they do have to behave in a way and act in a way and manage themselves in a way that they qualify based on merit, not just because they are neighborhood associations. So I think it's great to have that conversation. I think that this lobbying ordinance is, as more than anything else, inoculative. I mean, we're growing from a big town into, in many ways, a small city and beyond, and I think that we have to have these things in place, much like the clean voter elections efforts as well. So I look forward to having the discussion.
I'm not so much talking about exemptions. Again, I'm talking about just basic fundamental inclusion that doesn't look to who your affiliation is, but to how much time you spend
in City Hall. You and I disagree then. I do think taking it from 16 to 8 hours will, during the seasons of the year, not in the summer where we don't do a lot, but I do think it will capture more people who are lobbying. It is seasonal, though, and it isn't even necessarily seasonal. It comes in waves. We have issues that come up that are very controversial, that engender a lot of lobbying, and there are periods of the year and years where we don't. But I do think that the bigger the net and the finer the net is, it's to the benefit of more disclosure of more people lobbying, and I think that's to the benefit, a benefit to the city.
Well, I would just say that I certainly have an open mind that would be happy to see what you come up with, Commissioner Leonard. I mean, I guess for me, I you know, and that's why we have different folks. To me, I probably not supportive because I don't think there's any tricky work to figure out what people who aren't paid are lobbying on, and I think the disclosure of the calendar solves that problem. And if somebody's interested, they can get that information so quickly that putting another reporting requirement on groups. I mean, my interest in the lobbying requirement is that I've many times met with people and had no idea who was paying them to lobby me. And they weren't required to disclose that. And I think often paid testimonials appear to be not that. And so for me, I think the only thing that is hard to fathom is who's paying somebody to lobby. I don't think there's any problem figuring out who the Friends of Trees or the League of Women Voters are or how much they're meeting with us, and requiring them to fill out a piece of paper, including the neighborhood association, seems to me to be not adding transparency because I don't think there's any mystery there. I think it's creating a hurdle to interacting with us because people are going to start to say, well, maybe I don't want to come in and make a round of discussions if I'm going to get dinged for not filling out a bunch of paperwork. You know, so for me, I want to keep this more surgically focused on paid lobbyist is what I mean by a lobbyist, as opposed to who influences us in terms of that.
Well, I was hoping not to have to give an example, but I guess I have to give an example to respond to what would otherwise be a good argument that you're making. I don't know about anybody else here, but I've been lobbied more by some in the Linton community than I have on any other subject. First with whether or not to rezone industrial property to residential from industrial, and then now whether or not it's okay for a biodiesel plant to go in. The Linton property is owned by shareholders of the Linton Plywood that is now defunct but still own shares in the plywood. It has been represented to me that it is fairly common knowledge in the Linton community that a number of them are shareholders in Linton Plywood. and thus the representations to us about what should or should not happen to that property weighs heavily on the value of that property. I personally believe that, you know, I shouldn't have to get into finding out who from there is or is not representing either the community interest or their own personal financial interest. My preference would be that it shouldn't make any difference to me, but that the public should know not just about the meetings, because my emails don't show up on the meetings. And I get very detailed, lengthy emails, which I think all of you get carbon copied on, about the pros and cons of a biodiesel plant in the Linton community. Those take a lot of research and time, and I would argue that will probably fall in the definition that you think is appropriate for a lobbyist. But because that isn't necessarily a lobbying entity as we've defined it, they don't have to reveal to the public their lobbying activities. So I guess my reaction is to say, instead of us getting in and parsing all that and going in and saying, well, we really think you are a lobbying entity, is just to have it be more inclusive who it is that has to register, such as in the legislature. When a person goes down to the Oregon legislature, if they're doing nothing but on a personal level lobbying for their aged parents' rights in the state of Oregon, and they spend more than, I think it's 18 hours doing that, they register as a lobbyist. They don't have to be paid. They can be down there in egalitarian efforts to do whatever it is they want, but you reach that threshold, it doesn't matter. You just register. And I think that's my preference here. I get that we're probably not going to reach a consensus on that, at least, but I would think at minimum at least organizations that have representatives, whether they're nonprofit or not, and it's not punitive. I mean, some of the debate surrounding this has been characterized as though it's punitive. It's not. It's to make transparent those that come here and meet with us and or write us letters and or send us emails.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I'm totally open. I mean, I'm willing to look at it. I mean, I don't think there's anybody who's even remotely interested in the Linton situation who doesn't know what you just said.
Right.
So to me, having a bunch of paperwork.
Except the media and except the public. I mean, you know it. I know it.
No, I've talked to lots of media people. They know there's shareholders involved in that. I mean, but I guess, you know, my point is that, you know, I'd rather have that happen sometimes than submit citizens to, you know, hundreds of citizens group to paperwork that does so nothing. But I guess, you know, the other thing I guess that I might respond to, maybe just to brainstorm on, is that maybe there's an economic interest disclosure that might be a different way to get at it rather than.
I'm actually fine with that.
I would be very interested in knowing when somebody who has an economic interest in what they're lobbying me on. I mean, that to me is information I don't know.
And I guess the process I'm talking about we would do all that.
Yeah.
We would talk about all that and come up with some.
No,
I hope Commissioner Adams and I didn't have a misunderstanding, because I was hoping actually that we could not take action on this change until we came back with a package. That was my interest.
Oh, yeah, we do disagree on that. I'd like to get this improvement on this as incremental. And I'd like to get this on the books. We can always, you know, change our minds later or go a different direction. But, you know,
date in mind by which we would come back with the results of this other process.
I think we could do it within 2 months.
Okay, that's fine.
Is that fine?
Yeah.
So the end of September.
That's fine.
And I think the discussion is a good one. I mean, the idea of economic interest, Commissioner, I think is really useful. I'd like to explore that. And Commissioner Leonard, the Linton Plywood is a cooperative, and so it is legally a odd beast. And because it is a defunct cooperative, we should look at that to see what's instructive about it. But
the bigger point is they own the shares that are the controlling interest of the property. And the shares become exponentially more valuable if it's residential land than industrial land.
Right. I think your point vis-a-vis the lobbying ordinance, though, that I take away is that there are definitely folks who have ownership of something very valuable. And so what's the legal entity in which we can recognize and therefore everyone involved with it register?
But knowing how people parse these, I want to be really clear about one point. A lot of individual neighbors come and lobby about zoning changes that may impact the value of their property. That's not what I'm talking about.
Okay.
If you have an interest in a piece of property that will become more valuable if the council takes a certain action, that's what I'm talking about.
You own
about.
The property itself.
Yes.
Not the not not I don't want somebody to build something next to my house because it'll bring my value down, therefore I have an economic
interest. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about instances where a proactive decision on the part of the council that you're urging them to take exponentially increases your financial situation.
I got it. I think it's a great issue.
And since this is one of several tools that we're using, including publishing our calendars, I think we should review all of those things to see if they're being effective.
I like that.
Well, in that case, I need 3 months. No.
That's fine. I mean,
2 months is fine.
I like that as well. If that.
I'm fine with that. I would certainly be supportive of voting this through and bringing the threshold down to 8 while you work on it, because I don't mean any offense. I mean, this is a good thing, but when 3 months is usually longer than 3 months.
Not in my office.
That's why I asked for the
date. I'm just talking about my and Randy's office, not yours.
Yeah.
And so I thought, it would be instructive, I actually think, during that period to at least get 1 8-hour reporting in and see what happens, because actually the results of the question that's being waged, the first one of bringing it from 16 to 8, does that actually change what we're seeing? The extent to that which changes what we're seeing might actually impact my view of this next question, because if we're picking up a lot more by just moving it to 8, I might be less inclined to broaden the net quite as much. I would love to get that result during the exact 3 months in which Sam is going to get this dealt with.
Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
So non-emergency moves to a second reading.
Thanks.
Please read item 941.
Appoint Mark Edlin and Derek Smith to the Sustainable Development Commission for terms to expire August 1, 2009.
Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Members of the Council, the Sustainable Development Commission is a citizen advisory panel that reports directly to the Portland City Council and also to the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners. They've existed in one form or another for about 8 years now and have helped the city work on everything from green building, sustainable food policy, and toxics reduction. 6 of the 11 members are appointed by the City Council, and 5 are appointed by the county. Last spring, the SDC presented 2 reports to Council, including a report with recommendations for how the city and county could further regional sustainable economic development opportunities. And they are focused on working right now with stakeholders and community partners to begin realizing some of those recommendations. The appointments of Mark Edlin and Derek Smith, both leaders in sustainability, will be an asset to the SDC efforts. We have Derek Smith with us here today. Mark Edlin could not be here, but he has a very nice letter that Michelle Krim would like to read. I think we all know Mark Edlin. His well-known establishment is one of the greenest, if not the greenest developer, not only in Portland, but increasingly in places like California, Arizona, Utah, and Washington. They are committed to doing the right thing. Derek was director of corporate responsibility for Norm Thompson, where he built one of the retail world's first comprehensive sustainability programs, which was benchmarked globally by companies like Gap, IKEA, and McDonald's. So congratulations. He is now director of operations for Yolo Color House, a startup environmental paint company right here in Portland. So with that, I'll turn it over to Michelle. Can read Mark's letter, and then Derek, if you have a few remarks, that'd be great.
Okay, great. Mark definitely sends his regrets that he's not able to be here in person today. So I will read the statement that he wanted to relay to you. Mayor Tom Potter and Portland City Commissioners, I wish to thank you for considering my appointment to the Sustainable Development Commission. When my now retired partner, Bob Girding, and I co-founded Girding Edlin in 1996, it was based on one simple principle, trying to do the right thing. From developing sustainable projects that enhance communities to creating value for investors and passing up projects that don't meet the company's values, we are motivated by a sense of responsibility to do what's right. We have a passion for building a sustainable community and understand that investments in sustainable projects translates into value for the city and our neighbors, as well as investors and lenders. We are constantly in search of the solutions that will yield a more sustainable community with a strong focus on energy and water preservation, as well as generation. As a company, our goal is to produce buildings that generate more energy than they consume and consume more waste than they generate within the next 5 years. We have only a very little time in which to make the necessary changes in our built environment. We need to move quickly, particularly as it relates to the existing inventory of buildings that do not perform well. We believe our opportunities are immense, and Portland needs to continue to raise the bar further, faster, and lead not just Portland and Oregon, but the nation as we strive to create a truly sustainable world. We are committed to building strong business, government, and community partnerships that seek to create a vibrant economy and community supported with tax and regulatory systems which reward sustainability. I look forward to working with the Sustainable Development Commission and the City Council to nurture and grow a business sector that creates value for communities and the people who live, work, and play in them. Thank you for this opportunity to participate both as a private citizen and as a local business person. Sincerely, Mark Edlin.
Mr. Mayor, commissioners, everyone at the city, including Michelle, and everyone at the county, I just want to thank you for the honor of serving on the commission. I see the value that we all, for years, have created in the leadership position on sustainable development, and I think that there's a lot more work to do, but I really genuinely look forward to creating more value out of that asset that we've created through the commission, and if there's ever a place that can figure out how to do it, it's here. So I'm pleased to be part of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Need a motion to accept.
So
moved. Second.
Call the vote.
Adams.
Thank you. Aye.
Leonard?
Well, sustainability in Portland is not just the politically correct thing to do. It's an economic development tool, particularly for Portland. We have, because of the great work that's happened in Portland over a number of years, gained, honestly, a national, if not international, reputation for sustainability. And it's my hope that those efforts don't just manifest themselves in us coming up with great ideas, but we can actually bring industry, businesses, that focus on those kinds of issues here in Portland, thus providing jobs, tax revenue, and all the things economic development does. And I think we're on the precipice of that happening on a number of different fronts in the sustainability field. So I appreciate your willingness to serve, and it can't be a more exciting time to be involved, particularly at the level you will be, on those sustainability issues. And I look forward to working with you very close. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to welcome Derek and Mark. We appreciate the talents and insights and breadth of experience you have on these matters, and I know you'll make the commission better, and we look forward to continuing to get your advice and recommendations and acting on those. Thank you. Aye.
Stan.
Yeah, thanks for serving. Aye.
Potter.
I think it's a really exciting time for our city in terms of sustainable development, and the commission is going to play a very key role in that. I think both Derek and Mark are going to provide excellent service to our community. Thank you both. Aye. Please read item 942.
Accept bid of PCR Inc. for the Patton Square Park improvements for $562,000.
Good morning, Mayor Potter, members of City Council. I'm Jeff Bearer with the Bureau of Purchases, and before you is a purchasing agent report requesting approval to execute an agreement with Pacific Contracting Resources, who's doing business as PCR Incorporated, in the amount of $562,000 for the Patton Square Park Improvement Project. And to note a couple of different areas related to their contract, of the total subcontract amount, they have awarded close to 50% in the amount of 47.8% awarded to a WBE certified firm to do landscaping work. And in addition to that, they will be self-performing the other divisions of work and related to that project. They are in full compliance with the Equal Benefit Ordinance and also with the EEO and business license. So we also have a representative from the Parks Bureau, I believe, to in case there are any project questions.
Questions from the commissioners. Is anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? It's a report. I need a motion to accept.
So moved.
Please call the vote.
Adams? Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 943.
Authorize a master agreement with Motorola, Inc. for as-needed acquisition of public safety communication equipment and services.
Matt Lamp, Director of BTS, Chief Technology Officer. This is a master contract. It rolls up a number of previous contracts we had with Motorola. It basically sets, by negotiating a master contract, a little bit better terms and conditions for the city in terms of things like acceptance testing, giving us some better leverage around equipment and software. The key most significant feature in it is our software subscription that underpins the 800 megahertz public safety radio system. So all the software that manages the trunking system is maintained through this contract, as are all our purchases of additional equipment, both for the city and for the agencies that run with our system. We have now, I think, over 80 agencies who run not only the Motorola equipment, but run on our radio system, and this allows us the sort of spending authority limits to purchase that equipment over on the life of the contract. It is 5 years with a five-year renewal option. It does not actually give us spending authority. Spending authority comes through the budget. Currently this year we have, I think, $2.9 million in the budget associated with expenses on this contract. Any expenditure over that amount, we would be back in front of council for budget amendments. We don't anticipate any on the city side, but any of our partners, if they decide to replace a significant amount of radio equipment, may come to us and ask and pay for that equipment. We would come back to council for a budget adjustment in that case. So it's basically contractual cleanup for us.
Questions from the commissioners? Thank you, Matt. Is there anyone here to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this issue? Emergency vote, please call a vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 944.
Authorize a contract with the Police Executive Research Forum for business and technical functionality assessment and documentation of Portland Police Data Systems.
Second reading vote only. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 945.
Authorize a contract between the Portland Business Alliance and the city to provide police services for the Clean and Safe program.
Please come forward, Mike. Any other staff?
Morning, Mayor and members of council. I'm Mike Reese, precinct commander at Central Precinct. This contract provides for the salaries of three of our officers to work in downtown Portland. They address the neighborhood livability issues and work on order maintenance types of crimes in downtown. It continues a contract that we started with Downtown Clean and Safe in 1997 and has been very successful. Our officers directly impact the positive perception of public safety in downtown. They work on bicycle patrol and are some of our most effective officers. And I would highly recommend that you continue this contract.
Questions from the commissioners? Thank you. Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
We have one person sign up, Dan Hendelman.
Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Dan Hendelman. I'm with Portland Cop Watch. Good morning, Mayor and commissioners. I have brought with me the ordinance that you passed last May, which extended the contract created in 1997 that expired on June 30th of this year, and it was passed retroactively in May 2006 to finish the contract from June 30, 2005, and extend it until this year. In other words, almost a full year passed when the contract had actually expired. The original contract, and this reminder, says that this agreement would, by no terms, be extended beyond October 22 of 2007. So what we have is the city doing kind of retroactive business, and in this case, extending a contract for 10 years beyond a point when it said it would not be extended at all, to provide basically police officers to a private entity, the Portland Business Alliance, which is paying their salaries and their overtime and their benefits. And I understand the value of public-private partnerships that you like to describe, but there's a thing in public-private partnerships called tax money. And most people, when they pay tax money, they get the same services as everybody else. But it appears that the Downtown Business Alliance gets to hire their own police officers. There have been articles about this in the Portland Mercury and in Street Roots, and the growing concerns about the flip side of this question, which is the lack of accountability for private police officers. But in this case, what we have is a private entity paying the salaries of these officers to do, I assume, what is something that's pleasing them, or else they wouldn't continue to pay. So I think that considering this is another retroactive agreement that is backdating for a month, it would be better to have a longer conversation with the community about what it means for private money to be paying for our public police officers. And I hope that you would take this seriously and allow for that dialogue to happen, especially because this is a 10-year contract. And there are more and more serious questions about privatizing public safety and all aspects of the public commons, as it were. And I guess my final comment on this is that when the sit-lie ordinance came to pass, we offered that if we wanted to raise $350,000, as the PBA had, could we buy our own ordinance? And I guess the question is, if we raise enough money, can we buy our own police officers too? So I hope that you will discuss this seriously.
So I want to ask you a question. Because you said that this money provides police officers to a private entity. So I've inquired on this point, and it is my understanding that you've mischaracterized this, that in fact they augment those that are assigned to Central Precinct by the number of officers that this pays for, and the individual officers that are being reimbursed to the city by the PBA for don't even know they're the ones that are working downtown because the PBA is paying it. In other words, they just augment the existing force so that the actual reality is that we're, and as you know, I've supported some of your issues, so I hope you take note of my concern with how you're characterizing this. So that my understanding is that everybody downtown benefits without distinction, whether they're a member of the PBA, whether they just happen to be visiting downtown, because we've augmented the downtown force by the number of officers this pays for. Do you have a different understanding?
I guess because the contract is very broad in its language, it's very hard to understand. But it appears that they're talking about paying the salaries of specific officers. And it appears from even Commander Reese's presentation that he was talking about some specific officers who are carrying out this on bicycle patrol. So maybe somebody can address that. But I thought that this was about a certain number of officers and that those specific officers' particular job was to augment the work of the downtown clean and safe by coming to their aid and conducting the arrests and so forth when their ability as private security ended and they needed police officers to enforce the law.
I got my information from Bernie. And so maybe Bernie and Officer Reese, or Commander Reese.
Why don't we have Commander Reese come back?
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to address these concerns.
Bernie? What's that? No, I mean, I asked you yesterday this very question, and that's why I'm representing what I am. So,
Commander Reese, I think since he's the commander, understands the the relationship? Please explain it.
The officers that are assigned to work with PPI under this contract work directly for me. They are accountable to the Portland Police Bureau and to the citizens of Portland. They follow our rules and our procedures, and I direct their work. We do liaison with the downtown clean and safe officers, and the officers that are out riding bicycle carry one of their radios as well as ours, so that if one of the downtown clean and safe officers comes upon a crime in progress or a situation where they need an officer, they have faster access because these officers are on bicycle working in that downtown geographic area.
So I need for you to address the issue specifically that I've raised.
In regards to assignment,
mm-hmm.
We have three officers that are dedicated to that detail. It can rotate, and it has in the past, among different officers, but generally we like to keep the same group of officers because they know the business owners, they know the people downtown, they know the social service providers.
So, I mean, what I'm interested in is, do these three officers narrow what they would otherwise enforce because they are working as a result of this contract, or do they do the same kinds of arrest, patrol, citations without regard to whether or not it's a PBA-affected property or not?
They do, and they work in a specific geographic area, which is the downtown core area, and I want them to work.
What is that geographic area?
It's basically inside the 405 loop and the
Willamette
River, yes.
And the Markham Bridge, and then to the north, what?
I think it's Burnside. It might be a little bit on the other side of Burnside into Old Town. It actually is. It goes up to, I think, Davis or...
So is it the Markham Bridge to Davis?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So they work in that area, and just so I'm clear, they're distinguished because they carry an extra radio that allows them to communicate with the private security folks.
And I direct them to work on neighborhood livability issues. They do not take radio calls for service. We have
what's
district
a neighborhood
officers.
Livability issue? What would be an example?
Open containers of alcohol. Offensive littering, aggressive behavior by people. They often come in contact with mentally ill people, so they work closely with Project Respond and Cascadia.
So if a complaint comes from a business owner that is a non-PBA member, they don't care and they don't know?
They would not know.
They would not know. And if they witnessed any you hear what the issue is here, that there's some sense that maybe they are just doing the work for the PBA, and I'm trying to determine whether that's accurate or not.
They work for me and the Portland Police Bureau and the citizens of Portland, and if they come upon a crime in progress, they deal with it.
Who's
just like
sergeant?
Any other police officer.
Their sergeant, is he a sergeant that oversees a number of other officers as well?
They work for Sergeant Fender, who is our special events sergeant, and he is assigned a day shift at Central Precinct.
And so they are there other officers besides these PBA officers that report to Sergeant?
No, he works because of his duties. Those are the only officers that he has assigned to him. But he coordinates all of our demonstrations and protests in downtown Portland. He liaisons with any of the special events like the Rose Festival or Cinco de Mayo.
So, Bernie, yesterday when we talked, I mean, it's clear this is different than what I was hearing. I mean, I asked you how you audited this. I asked you, how do you keep check on it? And you said you don't, but did you understand that this?
Well, I think I was trying to answer a slightly different question, which was two questions. One was, how are they paid? So that was the issue that...
The question to me was, how do you know that you have three extra officers, and how do you know that they didn't hire them and then decrease the amount on duty? And clearly the better answer would have been, well, because they're specifically designated.
Yeah.
And you didn't tell me that.
And that's something that I wasn't aware of, so I apologize
for that. You
weren't
aware of that, okay. You're pretty new to the PBA. Yeah.
Just to be clear, though, that on any particular shift, every officer is assigned a specific duty and geographical area. And whether it's general patrol in Southwest or in downtown, they actually have very specific duties. This particular detail, because it's paid for out of the LID, works within the boundaries of the LID.
Okay.
And in terms of what they do, they will, although they don't answer to radio calls, they will enforce any law in the city on any property or public area.
Which right, I would expect, but the bigger point is they don't do extra things because they work for the PBA, specifically for the PBA. They just generally are there to handle the kinds of issues you described, the livability issues.
And absolutely.
Okay. Does that sound different to you than what you thought, Dan?
Well, it doesn't address the question of how much of their time is taken up by these calls from the private security guards, that other officers aren't taking those calls. So the point is that businesses who aren't part of the PBA or who didn't direct those private security guards what they think are livability issues.
So what's an example of one of those issues where they would respond? Mike, if you know, the private security guard would say, we need police assistance on what kind of a thing?
Well, I think the open container of alcohol is a very typical call in downtown Portland where you'll have a security officer outside a building who might come across someone who's drinking alcohol or intoxicated. And at that point, they would call one of our officers. They would either use the radio that they have if they have access to our downtown clean and safe officers, or they're going to call the non-emergency line. And this just facilitates that communication. It gets our officers there faster. They deal with the problem, and then they're on to something else.
Okay.
And that may, and to take care of that, it may be calling Hooper and having that person taken care of there. It may be a citation or some other type of situation.
Great. Thank you very much.
We have similar agreements with TriMet, the Housing Authority of Portland, the Lloyd District. It's people who have special needs that, that also are willing to help pay the city to deal with those special needs.
Great. Thank you. I probably should have called you as well, and I thought after I talked to Bernie, I felt comfortable that it was just augmenting the force, but I'll do that next time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, folks. It says emergency vote. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 946.
Authorized settlement with Gregory J. Schultz regarding disability and employment claims.
Staff?
Good morning. I'm Stephanie Harper with the City Attorney's Office. This ordinance would authorize a settlement with Greg Schultz that would resolve all of his disability as well as potential employment claims against the City of Portland. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to take them.
I ask the same question every time, just so that it's very clear to those that might be listening that you're recommending the settlement because you believe it will be in cheaper for the taxpayers to do this settlement than to pursuing legal options.
That's correct.
And the saving is significant in this particular issue.
That's correct.
This is FPDNR. It's paid out of FPDNR funds. It's in regards to a police officer off on disability. It was part of our return to work program. But he had already taken vocational training and been trained elsewhere in another state. And we're basically buying out his pension rights.
Buying out his disability, not the pension side. But the
disability.
Right, and correct. And with the FPDNR reforms last fall, that provided for a charter change that gave the administrator of the FPDNR authority to, upon approval of City Council, to actually recommend settlement on disability claims. And so this is in accordance with that authority.
Further questions? It's emergency vote. Please call the vote.
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I would want to sign up testify.
Is anybody who wishes to testify to this matter? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 947.
Authorize the Director of Portland Parks and Recreation with City Attorney review and approval to execute right of entry permits and temporary construction easements as needed to repair, improve, or maintain Park Bureau property.
Commissioner Salzman.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a rather routine item, but it's important to the work of our Parks Bureau. Sometimes in order to make repairs or improvements on parks property, staff need to utilize adjacent private property. This requires a permit or easement from the adjacent property owner, and currently that can only be gained through council action. This change would allow these easements to be gained without having to go through council, although they will be reviewed by the city attorney prior to their execution by the director of parks.
Does anybody sign up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Any further council discussion? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 948. Excuse me, it's a second reading.
948. Lease certain space in Multnomah Center to 7 tenant groups from July 1, 2007 through June 30, 2008.
Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read 949.
Authorize subrecipient contract with the Portland Schools Foundation for $950,000 to administer the Community Grants Fund to support the citywide schools family housing initiative and provide for payment.
Second reading, vote only. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 950.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement for $450,000 with Multnomah County and the Housing Authority of Portland for services and programs to support the citywide schools, families, housing initiative and provide for payment.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard? Salzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 951.
Authorize subrecipient contract with the Portland Housing Center for $200,000 to create a 10% cash reserve of sales of its loan portfolio over the next two fiscal years to support citywide schools, families, housing initiative, and provide for payment.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams?
Good job, Eric. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Good job, Eric. Yes. We're adjourned until next week.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll see you later after we get out.